So for the second part of this very different episode of the podcast, we're welcoming Axel Brando, who's a computer scientist and mathematician specializing in trustworthy AI. Axel, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for making the time to talk to us. So I'd like to start by giving an overview of your career. You spent the better part of the last decade dealing with research on deep learning, AI, and since 2020, you've been at the Barcelona Supercomputing Center, which is a name that sounds really cool, by the way. So to kick things off, give us an overview of the path you took until you got to where you are today.
I always have been like doing applied research. So from the very, very beginning, I started from after the doing the both degrees, I started doing applied research in several companies and public institutions. So normally what I try to do when I'm doing applied research is to motivate all my research in problems that can solve needs of industry. So the goal there is to try to identify which are the things that we can say that state of the art can contribute to improve the needs that can have a company. And for instance, I started to be doing my research inside the bank, the BBVA. It's a bank company, it's a financial company. I did there my PhD also. So what we try to do there is to identify some problems that they have related to my research. My research mostly was about how to model uncertainty using neural networks. So what I have been doing during all these times is we have good functional estimators, you can say, good ways to approximate things, good ways to solve problems. But when we are dealing with critical problems, we need to be able to detect when this system is not confident enough. So we need to modify the way this model is like solving the problems and in order to be able to only use it when we are confident or reliable on that. So that's the goal on uncertainty modeling at the end. But this then we extended to other fields, for instance, in autonomous driving, or even here in the Barcelona Supercomputing Center, we are leading a research line that is going beyond and trying to extend this, we can say, uncertainty modeling to other fields like medicine, like fake news detection even. We have an European project that goes in that line. So what we are trying to do there is to, let's imagine that you have several systems that are detecting if a new is fake or not. What we are doing there is to adding information about the reliability that we have about these systems, because at the end, these systems are critical because we are using these systems to take decisions. So we are not only confident about this is trust or this is not trust. We need more information about what parts of the text you think that are the ones that gives you the clue that this is, for instance, a fake. So you need to analyze the text in a more, we can say, rich way than only saying this is trust or this is a fake or not. So that's a goal, for instance, in that project or projects about our autonomous driving. What we are doing is also the same, trying to not only producing, we can say, the system that is managing the car, producing a system that is able to detect critical situations and then give this, we can say, pass the responsibility to a human to then this human take the decision or make a decision that ensures that the system is in a safe state.
Right. And you mentioned uncertainty modeling, which is also a name that sounds really cool. We've talked about many aspects of AI modeling, but uncertainty modeling is something that we had never come across, had never come up in the podcast. So maybe talk a little bit about what that means and how it works within the bigger picture of training an AI model.
So I think that we can illustrate it with a medicine example. So let's imagine that you are in a hospital and there exist like different hierarchical roles. As you will see now, we are not talking about AI. It's something that it goes beyond. So let's imagine that you're in this hospital and there are different hierarchical roles. For instance, in Spain, we have the role of medical attending and the role of medical resident. The medical attending holds a higher hierarchical position than residents doesn't have. And the resident can seek support of him or her when they have doubt. No? So we have two roles. Now, considering this scenario, no? Imagine that we are arriving to an emergency room and we have a fracture in our leg and the resident attends us. This resident must decide initially when the patient should be operated, but they can also harbor doubts. What express that doubt is, well, the doubt can arise from various reasons and is closely connected to the sources of uncertainty. The resident doubt could be articulated as follows. I have never encountered this type of injury before, and I'm uncertain about the extent of what type of operation I should perform. This is what we refer to as an anomaly or a domain uncertainty. And alternatively, this doubt could arise because during the MRI that they can do in your leg, the patient had an electric device somewhere and the MRI quality is poor. Here, the problem is not that the resident is unfamiliar with the pathology, but that the information that to deduce that the nature no, of this injury is incomplete. This is termed as aleatoric uncertainty and differs from the preceding domain uncertainty. Or it could happen that in the room, let's imagine that you have two residents that mutually support each other. And if the two residents concur on the diagnosis, we will trust it more than if they disagree, right? So in that case, we are dealing with a different type of uncertainty that is inside epistemic uncertainty that is related to the individual bias of each resident, no? All of this information give us different clues about the possible doubts that we can have. This information then helps us to tackle the decision we will do afterwards in a different way. And now we can do the same parallelism, no, the analogy in AI-based systems. So we have an AI-based system performing a task, assisting an autonomous driving, and attending, no, a person who is only used when the situation is critical. No, we have the two roles. It's the same example, but translated to the AI part. No, the more responsibility we transfer to the predictive system, the more crucial it becomes to identify those critical cases where we have aleatoric uncertainty because we can have lack of sufficient information to unequally predict the outcome. We can have domain uncertainty because we can encounter a new case requiring a new solution, or we can have even biases because at the end we have a predictive system. This predictive system learns based on data and this data has biases. So at the end we can encounter this kind of problems and we need then the help of the resident in that situations to solve these situations.
Right. And for the folks listening in who got interested in uncertainty modeling, which sources of information do you recommend they go after and follow so they can dive in?
Oh, yes. There are a lot of literature on this. I mean, what I told before is that this is connected now with other areas, not only with artificial intelligence. And in fact, this is true. We can see that this is something that comes from a lot of years before. We can go even to the Greece. And we can see that philosophers are debating because in this kind of uncertainties, this is not something related only to, we can say, to machine learning community. But if we want to learn about this in machine learning community, we can go to Bayesian statistical community. We can go to people that is working with physical systems. They deal with a lot of sources of uncertainty and they need to identify the sources of uncertainty. Depending on the problem, at the end, each kind of uncertainty is more like important. So for instance, for physics people, it's more important the measure error, the error that you have when you measure something. For us, for the people from machine learning, normally we don't go to this kind of uncertainties. We are more concerned about anomalies, about biases. So depending on the community, you will have more the focus on one kind of uncertainties or the others.
I see. And I agree with Marcus. The name Barcelona Supercomputing Center is super cool. And what does it happen in the Barcelona Supercomputing Center? Like, what do you do on a daily basis? And why does it have this name, like supercomputing?
Because at the end, the Barcelona Supercomputing Center is one of the centers in Europe that have a supercomputer. Supercomputer is a machine that at the end is able to do computation that requires a high amount of, like we can say, of resources. For instance, the last supercomputer has a price of 500 million of euros to build it only. And why we need supercomputers? That could be the question. And the answer here is because there are some like goals or things that we want to do as society that requires this amount of resources to try to solve it. The point is, if you delegate this investment to the companies, then what you are doing is losing competitivity compared to other states like United States or China that they have their supercomputer. So the way to be at the level of competing with other zones of the world is to having a public, we can say, funded supercomputer that gives the opportunity to the different companies, in that case in Europe, to execute, to solve some problems that requires this amount of computation. For instance, AEMET is the Agencia Estatal de Meteorología. It's an agency of meteorology inside Spain that they require high amount of computations. And if they need to pay this supercomputer only for their computations once time per day, it doesn't make sense. It makes more sense to share these resources with different companies. And what we are doing in the Barcelona Supercomputing Center is a public research center that what is doing is, once we have this supercomputer, is putting above, we can say, a research center that is providing services using this supercomputer, providing the opportunity to do research using this supercomputer, and then exploring new areas. And that's the reason we have now close to 800 of researchers inside the BSC, because at the end, there are a lot of areas that depends on a high amount of, we can say, a high amount of computation. So we have areas, for instance, protein folding, science like climate change problems, problems inside Monte Carlo problems about like simulations, and even the problems of artificial intelligence also.
It's a very famous thing because, I, if I'm not mistaken, the Barcelona Supercomputing Center was in a Dan Brown book called Origin some years ago. That was actually when I moved to Spain. I bought this book and they say about like a supercomputer in Barcelona. And when I saw your profile, like, huh, he's connected to Dan Brown somehow.
Yeah, no, that's good. It's good to see that public research institutes are doing something that are providing impact on the society. And BSC is one of the examples where you can see that, well, we can do things that like change the society even from the public institutions. That's connected with some ideas that I would like to express in this podcast. So, but yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a one example, what paradigmatic, we can say, example, where you can see that public research have a lot of impact in the society and even can be something that give us the way to, we can say, to not only produce impact, but even obtain funding ways to then create an ecosystem where people can do research. No, normally, for instance, this is typical in Spain, where research is something that in public institutions is difficult. It's not something easy. And here you have an example where you can find a lot of ways to obtain funding and that give us the way to do research, even in a society where we have problems to go, we can say, doing these kind of roles in life.
Right. And speaking of research, one of the many cool things about being a researcher in any field, I guess, is that you usually get to see a little bit ahead of the curve on what's coming up, or what's going to be available in an infinite time frame for the general public. And when it comes to generative AI in this specific field, what are the cool things, the things that you're excited about that are popping up in research that we should be on the lookout for the near future, maybe?
One, I really like one concept. There is one concept that I really like inside this, we can say, wall of LLMs, that is the concept of emergence of intelligence. This concept is closely related even with uncertainty sources. And the idea here is that, let's put it in numbers. So we have 175 billion of parameters in GPT-3, no? And a training on, and is trained on vast stacks of data sets. So determining what is a new scenario and detecting anomalies becomes a really complex task. We are dealing with huge amounts of data. We are dealing with really big models that have a lot of information that even we don't know which kind of information we use for the training or not, because it's it's internet, it's whatever. So then when we are generating entirely, these models go beyond what we normally say as extrapolation or interpolation. No, these models generate novel answers. And it seems that they pose, a new challenge for us, because at the end, given that these models generate answers that we don't know if they are new or not, this gives us the challenge to detect if these, for instance, answers are true or not, and these answers are biased or not. I mean, there are a lot of things that appear that in terms of research, I think that is an issue that we had. So as you know, we started with an uncertainty modeling long time ago. It's not something new, but now it becomes more important because at the end we are at a point where we need to be super confident on what we are doing because these systems are like being more used in our lives. So I think that what changes this kind of models is this, that now this emergence of intelligence, no, we are dealing with systems that are not solving one task. We are dealing with systems that they learn a lot of different tasks and they emerge to do something new. We are dealing with something that we are not capable to understand if we are in a new situation or is something that is like, we can say, a mix of the past, no? And this is super, super interesting in terms of research.
Right. You mentioned bias, and another aspect of the research you work on involves safety, reliability, accountability, right? Mm-hmm. Which, looking from the outside, are issues that tend to get a lot of attention when something goes wrong. But of course, that these are very important and ongoing issues within the companies and the research community when it deals with AI. So when it comes to the main companies that are ahead on this Gen AI field, so OpenAI, Anthropic, Meta, Google, Midjourney, you can mention a few if I didn't. How are they doing when it comes to safety and accountability?
Well, it's something that is a question that I think that even they are now working on it. It's not a question that they have the answer right now. So, and we have different examples for this. We for instance, two days ago, we have another example. 2 days ago, we in the 1st and 2nd of November, there was held the AI Safety Summit, and where global leaders, CEOs of major technologies corporations from different markets discussed the needs, not only for regulate, but also to measure the existential impacts, no, they say, of AI that can have in our societies. These kind of things reaffirms the essential nature of ensuring that these AI systems are safe, interpretable, understandable in terms of reasoning behind these decisions. No, and then what they are doing, these companies, depends a lot of the kind of, well, the country that they belong, you can say they it's depending on the, for instance, Europe is not going in the same line that United States and China. No, each kind of zone of the world is working in a different way. So, for instance, in Europe, there is a concerned effort to establish common regulations and certifications before introducing, in the case of autonomous driving, this autonomous driving to the roads. But in United States, the approach is different. They introduced the to the market and tested the cars before, no, these rules and regulations are firmly in place. And what about China? No, this is a question that normally people ask. Well, what happens with China? Well, there are a lot of things with China. I mean, I'm normally more focused on Europe, so China is not my expertise, we can say. But despite the fact that normally we can say that regulatory landscapes is where ideologies transforms into laws, we can say, no, normally there is a connection between this kind of things. We have instances, specific instances in the literature. So, for instance, in the last May, we have in Beijing cars in the roads. So we have examples where China is trying to test these systems as the United States is doing, and then we can ask ourselves what is happening here. And I think that what is happening is more or less clear. That is that United States and China are concurrently competing for the leadership in autonomous vehicles in that case. From now, and they have a date, and they normally say that 2035, they will reach the autonomous driving. So from now to 2035, there is one leader and they are leading. They are trying to arrive to this point. So that's the reason they forget about rules and try to put it, we can say, in Spanish, we say we put the eggs in all the baskets. They put the eggs in all the baskets. They try to do the regulation at the same time that they are putting the cars in the streets, and they are all doing all the same things, because at the end, it will be a turning point. It will be a turning point in our society. Once these systems appears in the streets, it will change a lot of ways we are doing a lot of things. So that makes sense. So depends on depends on the zone, depends on the problem. But normally we can say that most of the companies are doing a process that is more or less similar, that they are concerned about artificial intelligence. No, we can have examples. There is, recently I saw a car that they say, we have ChatGPT in our car. Well, I mean, this is something that we can use ChatGPT in our car, so we can see that there are a lot of examples in, I mean, what can be, why can be used full ChatGPT in our car? This could be a question, no? And I don't know what they are doing because it's not transparent right now, but one thing they can do using ChatGPT in the car is like the person who is driving can say something like, hey, I couldn't see anything behind or whatever, no? And or in a more polite say, in way, they can say, could you please clean the rear window for me? Whatever. At the end, it's text. This text can be transformed, passed through ChatGPT, and then ChatGPT can give us like a vector number of number representation, and this vector of numbers that is the hidden representation can be compared with different actions that can do the car and search for the closest one, and then say, it seems that this person is saying that we need to clean the rear window, perhaps. No, I mean. Right. There are some a lot of applications where these kind of systems can be like mixed, and I think that now we are in an explosion. No, a lot of companies are trying to introduce AI in all of the things.
Definitely, yes.
Axel, one thing about your research, I don't know if he tackles this, but you mentioned a lot about autonomous vehicles, like cars, self-driving cars, and this kind of stuff. Do you worry about things like prompt injection? So maybe I don't know, people trying like physical. Can be a physical one, but can be something like, I don't know, the road sign that says you can drive at 60 kilometers per hour. And then someone puts a screen that people cannot see and says 250. And this can cause an accident or something.
This gives us the clue or the opportunity to do research on uncertainty modeling. So at the end, what we are doing here is in uncertainty modeling is to detect this kind of cases. So this is one, we can say this is a bias, for instance. This can be understood as a bias, no? The system has the bias that if it shows some part of the signal that is blue, it is not a restriction. And then someone can put something there blue and then goes to a, this is a bias. So we can try to avoid this kind of biases. So I'm concerned about this can be a risk, but whenever we have these cars in the street, we have risk. So that's what happens when you have a critical system that is playing alone. So there are different, for instance, in autonomous driving, there is what they call as ASILs, levels of ASILs. Depending on the asile or what you are considering, you are more or less autonomous. Normally, Europe not, but United States and China is considering an ASIL of 3, that they, most of their cars that are autonomous can do most of the parts of the driving actions. But there are some ones that some of the actions that then calls the attention of the driver, and the driver takes, like Tesla, for instance. You have the example of Tesla. Tesla is autonomous, but not at all. There are some actions that Tesla tell you, hey, come back, because here you need to take the decision, because I'm not reliable about this decision. So I think that this kind of corner cases that you expressed is something that we need to take care of, and we need to do research on that. So that's good. In terms of research, it's good.
And you mentioned that you wanted to speak about something specific. What was it?
Well, I think that we were going in this line. So there are some parts of this speech that I'm doing right now that I think that can be connected to this, the need of inclusivity. I think that we are at a point where there are a lot of people that now can have fear about artificial intelligence in the way that it is evolving. But I think that there is one keyword that I think that we need to go there, that is inclusivity. We need to go to advance in this line. We need to, none of these advantages, we can say, makes sense if we restrict it to a subset of the society. We are at the moment where these potential actions of including everyone in this journey clearly opens the door to new potential risk at the same time. So, however, at the same time, we have no certainty that by restricting, we can say, this knowledge to certain part of the society will prevent to have these potential dangers. So we are at a point that I think that if we only think about restricting, the advantages will go forward, so, and the disadvantages also. So on the contrary, I think that we are at the point where we need to work on this, towards this inclusivity, we can say, because this will go towards transparency, advancing together, and therefore preparing ourselves for new challenges. So I think that this is connected to another thing that it's super important in my community, at least in our research, that is we are at a point of convergence. So we are at a point where artificial intelligence is giving us the opportunity to multidisciplinary areas work together. A lot of areas that are totally different work together. We can be in a team where we have people from medicine, engineering, environmental science working in a problem that is the same problem from different viewpoints. And this is super interesting in terms of research. I think that is a huge opportunity to work in problems that requires a lot of experts. So we avoid, we discard the idea that we have one Superman, the person that is doing all the things. We go to teams of different experts that are working towards one goal. And I think that this is super motivating in terms of research. And applied research is, I think, a pretty good moment that we need to take into consideration and try to push for arriving to that.
And when it comes to AI research, most of our listeners are from Brazil. They're learning, studying AI and such. And for those who are interested in getting into researching AI, what should they do? How do you start? Where do you go? What would you tell them?
I think that there are different... I mean, if you ask me this question like several years ago, I will tell you different books and read a lot of things. But right now, I think that we are at a point that there are two major things. So motivation is one of the most important things. And how you try to concentrate or focus this motivation in try to learn is super important. So one way could be, for instance, using these LLMs models to try to know how to ask questions to learn things. I think that is super interesting. I mean, if you did this in the past, super interesting when you are learning something new using these models, because it's having like a person in front of you that you can ask whatever you want and it's just answering you things that can be true or not. So our goal now is not to try to memorize all the things we have in front, is to be critical. So our goal is to, once you have this information, you need to know how to search in the internet, how to search in whatever, to try to validate it. So it's a way to speed up your learning process. But if you are doing this important part, that is trying to contrast the information that you have. So right now, I think that if someone wants to learn about artificial intelligence, I would recommend to, on one side, try to prompt this kind of LLMs. On another side, try to motivate himself or herself to do one project. There are a lot of applications of artificial intelligence, so they can try to think, to try to apply artificial intelligence in one kind of example. And when they are applying these things, they are learning a lot of things. And I think that is, for me, it's one of the future of education. I mean, I think that one of the parts, and that's something that I had in my mind that we can discuss at some point, but one of the parts that can impact this kind of models is in education field. I think that we are at a point where the way we are learning is could be totally different in the future. So I think that the way to be inclusive is to try to provide that all, I mean, to promote that all the people try to change the way they are learning. Now they are not learning by memorizing, now they are learning by being critic in the information they have. They have a lot of information, they have a lot of answers in front, and they need to know how to validate the information, how to learn the specific parts that are the good ones to arrive to the things they want to arrive. So I think that a combination of trying to have like a goal, like a project, whatever, and then trying to obtain this information by doing prompting to these LLMs, finding this information, I think it's a really good way. Then you can do masters, you can do PhDs, you can do whatever you want, because at the end it's part of the path, we can say. But the important part, I think, that is the motivation, and this motivation is like cultivated.
Regarding research, something that has been sort of a hot issue when it comes to AI training is what people say is like this unauthorized use of data, whether it's for text like ChatGPT or for images like DALL-E. As a researcher, I'm sure that this is the sort of subject that comes up a lot and came up a lot throughout history, not just because of these Gen AI features and tools. So how do you see the situation of these commercial tools being used on this training data that weren't exactly cleared by their owners for being there? And more importantly, what would be, in your opinion, a solution for this issue when it comes to the next steps of AI training and tools?
I'm from this kind of persons that think that ideas cannot be copyrighted. So I always think that an idea is something connected to previous ideas. It's something that even we can say that there are people that did a huge effort from passing from one stage to another stage. There was some past. So there are some connections. So in that sense, I'm some biased in terms of answering this question, because I would say that for me, the way is to be inclusive, as I said, is to try to search. I mean, I'm completely aware about what is doing, for instance, private research, and I did it from a lot of times ago, and I did, and right now I'm doing also. But so I'm concerned about what is competitiveness, no? What is trying to maintain part of your results not public to be competitive with the other companies. And I completely understand this part, because I think that is part of the game, you can say. But using this kind of models to generate things, at the end, we can say that there are some copyright parts, but at the end, it's doing some part that is mechanic. I mean, even when we are using LLMs to generate articles, scientific articles, we can say this is new, this is results that are new. But if you think what you are doing when you are using these techniques, at the end, what is providing you these kind of techniques is facilitating you the way to do all the narrative way, all the way to structure the ideas. But there is something before that is what you want to express, that I think that is something that an LLM right now it's not doing. That is, you will think about the idea and you will put it there. So in that sense, when people is arguing that we can have problems on copyright, I think that there are some parts that we need to understand that that are part from the literature. So at some point, the research you are doing, it's not private, it's public. It makes sense to be public because it's public domain and you need to go forward. If somebody is using this to generate new like creations, I think that is part of all our society. So I think that is something good. So I'm more aware, I mean, I'm more in favor of using these techniques for this, because I think that we'll accelerate, we'll change our way to work. For instance, the people that is doing design, I mean, there are people affected, I absolutely agree. There are people that completely change the way they are working. And even there are people that will be, the jobs that doesn't make sense to continue in the same way, needs to be done completely different. For instance, the people that did the research on artificial intelligence systems that change your voice now, as we are trying to do now, this kind of people absolutely directly impacts on, for instance, the people from the movies that change the narratives. I mean, there are some jobs that absolutely agree, they will be affected. And in that case, I'm completely aware that there will be changes. But in terms of copyrighted, I think that as far as we go forward, we will find new ways to copyright. We can say something that is higher level than even a design. So I think that the industry will find new ways to do it. Even I will persist that even I think that the concept of inclusivity is important. So I mean, I think that we will go in a good direction if this inclusivity concept is there. For instance, we have the ChatGPT. ChatGPT, when it's opened, it creates now a change in our society when it's free. Before that, we know as part of the AI community, we know that these models exist, but we didn't use it. Now it's creating an impact in the society. So we have one example of that.
And since you mentioned movies and this kind of stuff, how do you feel about deepfakes?
Well, I mean, I think that society should go to the direction of trust all the things that they saw in front. I mean, to be more critic. I mean, we are at a point that even if you see an image or a video of your friend doing whatever, you need to doubt. I mean, because these kind of things can be done like synthetically. So at the end, we need to go to a society where these tools of detecting when it's fake or not goes to a better position that helps us. But at the same time, we need to go to a society where we don't trust all the things that we see. I mean, there are when we are doing, for instance, in the European project, we are doing this kind of the fakeness part, no, the fake news detection. The point is that fake news is something that is not new. I mean, there are a lot of things that we had in our past that are fakes. what happens now? That we will have huge amounts of more realistic and more, we can say, directly precise goals to some person in a precise way. Yes. So we need to be more aware of this kind of thing. So it's a moment where the society should be more, well, should learn this kind of critics, we can say critical thinking in that sense. So I think that the only solution for this is critical thinking and research on trying to obtain more, not only doing research on fake news, doing research on how to detect this fake news. So I think that is the only way. For instance, there are people that say, no, we should stop these fake news generators. We should, how you can stop it? The point is how you can stop something that at the end, someone now, the knowledge in our society is at the point that we can do it. No, it's unstoppable. We are at the point where we can go to the point of saying, no, we need to close all the things, all closed source, but this is not the solution. The companies will have this source code. They will continue doing this. And we are losing the concept I said previously, the inclusivity. So we are at a point where we don't have the control or the awareness of at which extent this kind of models can do things like they are doing. For instance, let's imagine the situation. Imagine that right now we didn't have ChatGPT open. And they explain you that right now exists a technology that is doing these kind of things. Most of us will say, no, that's not possible. That's not possible. And the technology exists. We can do it. But it's true that there is a mismatch between our knowledge of what kind of extent we can arrive with technology and what we are doing. So we need to compensate that. We need to go to that point, not to the contrast that is closing this in closed form, we can say in closed source. And then we will have a problem there because the mismatch will be higher and higher and higher.
Right. And this comes to one discussion that has sort of dominated this market of especially Gen AI in this last year, which is the issue of open source versus a more closed development environment. OpenAI started by doing what it says in the label, right? Being more open. And then they changed their tracks as the market got more competitive and stuff. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you have companies like Meta, which I'd love to hear your opinion on that, but I'd say the bigger force in the open source community for Gen AI seems to be Meta, although I'm not convinced that they're doing this out of the goodness of their hearts and for the love of the research community. But so from where you're standing, where do you see this open source versus closed issue going, and what do you wish companies would do to try to help accelerate the field of Gen AI?
There are a lot of voices that now they say that this closed, we can say, direction goes in the direction of, well, increasing this gap. So as we are at the point that we are not a lot of aware of what are the possibilities of these models. If we provide these tools to the society, if the society can use it in their day-by-day life, we are providing to the society the possibility to understand what are the possibilities where they can arrive, no? Where we can extend this kind of models, what we can do with these models. If we go to the line of changing the code and only being something that is industrial private, we are losing competitiveness. I mean, for sure, in competitiveness in the sense that the society will not go in the direction of fairness, transparency, and this kind of value. So we can say a lot of things that it's super good to have transparency, but it's something that requires this inclusivity. If we are not include part of this society, if we are only considering a subset, we are losing this part. So transparency goes in that direction also. And in that sense, I think that we are we cannot predict the future. It's stochastic. We have uncertainty in front another time, but for sure, we are at a point where we can decide two paths, and they are totally different. One path goes in the direction of make this open, and the other goes in the direction of make this absolutely private. For instance, the AI Safety Summit, I'm not completely agree that this goes in the direction of make this public, because if we want to say something, this event was not public, was private to 100 of persons. So they invited some persons in private. They say that they did it. They said something. I think that we are at a point where we need to go to the direction of completely the contrast. We need to go to a direction where the things are open. This could generate, as I said, risks, but at the same time is the only way to try to deal with the risk. So we're at a point where if we lose the time, if we, for instance, there were people that signed a document that says that we need to stop these generative models during some months, they say a quantity of months, which is curious. I mean, how they use this number of months, it is something that for me it was interesting to know how they arrived to this number of months. But they say a number of months, which is interesting because at the end, if what they want is to have other companies that doesn't have these models included in their business, this is like doesn't make any sense. If you didn't get to this point, you can do it now. But this is the competitiveness of the market. If they are doing this to prevent going forward, we know that the people that have this market will continue to do it even in the closed way. So I'm in favor of make as more as possible the things that, I mean, I think that in applied research is the clear example. When you are doing applied research in the industry, you have some part of your code that is public, the other part that is not. And the frontier is super clear. The frontier is, there are some things that I am doing now, right now, that are competitive, but if I make public, I will lose this competitive. There are other parts that I can make public that I will not lose the competitiveness. And what I'm doing is pushing the community to say, hey, this exists. And I think that this frontier is super clear when you are doing research. And I think that they can appear this more or less this methodology. There are a lot of things that they can make public because they will not lose competitiveness. Even if ChatGPT opens some part of their models, they have another models that are more advanced than that. And they have, and then you require a lot of resources to execute this model. So it doesn't make sense. You can provide it. So you are in the frontier of this research line. So there are a lot of things that I think that needs to go to this line, to the line of playing with what you are making public, what you are not making public, because it's something you did in the last month. It's something that makes you the difference and provides you the opportunity to go forward, and then you are making public the new thing. So if we go in that line, I think that we can go out to a good point. But let's see.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. My final question for you is, what are your main sources of information to stay up to date on what's going on? What are the newsletters, maybe podcasts, websites, people you follow, and that you recommend that our listeners follow as well?
I always say that I didn't read a lot because I would like to have more time to read more things. But if you are looking at me, I'm always reading. So normally I'm reading whatever. I mean, I'm normally research. So that's the point. I'm biased on that. So normally reading research, but then there are a lot of, I mean, right now AI is in a lot of, we can say, areas. So you can find a lot of news, a lot of information to learn about this concept. So if you want to be updated, what you need to do is to practice the method of obtaining information. So the same method you are using to contrast things is the same method you need to use to learn new things. So it's, and even this, to be curious, I mean, to ask new things about what you can be interested in, about new topics, try to, doesn't stay in the same things, try to go forward. I mean, there are a lot of things that are going forward. So if you only stay in your mindset of the past, I mean, I think you are losing the opportunity to be different. We can say better or not, let's see. But the point is, I think that it's a way. The way is to try to be open, try to learn a lot of things, new things, try to be motivated with things you are learning. And if there are some things that doesn't like you, try to change it. Yeah. So this is like the method of living applied to the things you are learning.
Right. Axel, thank you very much for your time. If folks want to reach you directly to maybe continue this conversation, ask you something, where should I go?
You can send me an email to axel.brando@bsc.s. You can follow me on LinkedIn and then send me an email message. You can send me a message to Twitter, X, whatever. I mean, there are different social networks. You can send me an email. I mean, I think that, as I said, we require to be teams, you know, multidisciplinary teams. So we are at the point that we need to be have a different positions on the different problems we are tackling, try to solve them. So I think that is a good moment to make group between us, to the people that we want to do changes in the society. So yeah, you can send me an email and let's see.
Awesome. The links will be here in the description. Axel, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, man.
E para você que agora se interessou de vez para entrar no mundo da inteligência artificial, demos diversas dicas aqui de conteúdos que vocês vão encontrar na descrição do episódio e lá você encontra também o link para conhecer a Escola de Inteligência Artificial da Alura com direito a interações com a Luri, que é a própria inteligência artificial que a Alura fez para te ajudar nos estudos. Tem formações, por exemplo, para você tirar o máximo proveito aí do ChatGPT, Midjourney, as ferramentas mais usadas aí no mercado. E na descrição também tem link para um formulário para você preencher com recomendações de pessoas, de assuntos também para passar a deixar ainda mais útil para você o Hipsters Fora de Controle, que volta na sexta-feira que vem. Hipsters, abraços, tchau!
Este podcast foi produzido pela Alura, mergulhe em tecnologia, e Faculdade FIAP, Let's Rock the Future, edição Rede Gigahertz de Podcasts.